And welcome to another edition of Take Two with Doreen and Pete on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group radio station. And again, we're so happy to be here. Our second show, and we just happened to fall on right before Halloween. You believe that? We've got some spooky stuff to talk about. Obviously, Halloween is pretty big in my family. I don't know about Doreen, but it's very, very big in my family. But we do have a producer here, or an engineer, TJ, who basically has his anniversary on Halloween. Tell us about what made you pick Halloween.
So we wanted to do Black Friday, but Black Friday falls on different days every year. So I just said, why not Halloween? We both like Halloween. I was born on Friday the 13th, and you know that's always different every year as well. So we picked Halloween.
Every franchise, every movie franchise. I mean, you got a little Jason, a little. What about Freddy? You have any? You live on Elm Street too?
No, that was my mom.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, you also got to know this. I had a sister-in-law who got married on Halloween, and the rates were so much lower for the catering and for the hall Halloween.
Yeah.
So a lot of people do wait to that day because no one's going to book except for TJ. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Did you dress up, TJ? Did you, like, go with something else? Was it, like, foreplay already? Like, you know,
so
playing around?
So she wore a black dress. I wore a black vest and a white shirt, and then we quoted The Corpse Bride. That was our wedding
vows. Oh, that's
bells.
So cool.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
that is
really,
pretty
very cool.
And in the background, they had Halloween going. Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
All right, the centerpieces were jack-o'-lanterns. You didn't have to serve anything, just like, you know, that crappy candy corn.
Yeah.
That's so your guests can have that.
My wife loves the candy corn.
Oh, that's
she
terrible.
Loves the
no.
candy corn.
I'm going to have to talk to her next time. She's a doctor,
yes,
knowing
she is,
all what
she
knows, and she eats that stuff.
Well, she just loves that. That's her thing, candy corn.
No.
Speaking of candy now, let's get into candy here.
How are you going to do this segue now? You have some interesting segues.
Reese's Pieces, man. I am a Reese's Pieces guy. I love it.
Nah.
Absolutely love it.
Nah.
Okay. What about you, TJ? What do you like?
I like Reese's Pieces. I'm a big Butterfinger guy.
Oh, better not lay a finger on his Butterfinger.
Trust me, I won't do
that.
Are
we getting product endorsements?
I mean, my
this?
Wife, no, we won't, but we should
I'm
going to
be writing
that.
Them now, I know.
Yeah, my wife would be jealous if I laid a finger on his Butterfinger, so
and
we're not going to do
she
that.
Who knows? She may like that. You don't know.
I don't think so, but you know, the problem with Butterfingers is this. They stick to the roof of your mouth, all over your gums, and you just can't get rid of it. Whereas, like, with the Reese's...
Sounds like a few guys I've dated.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
They can go round and round and round and round, but the bottom line is, I like it. I like that because it's easy to swallow. It doesn't really melt your hands.
I'm not going there.
That's why I said it.
What kind of show is this?
I don't know.
Halloween
it's
is
a
bringing
Halloween
out the
show.
Ghoul in you.
Okay. Well, I just love candy, and I give the best candy. I mean, you know, they get the little things.
You don't get the
pennies.
No,
I give the full bars.
Or the carrot sticks.
Those
stupid neighbors that give like a penny.
Yeah, no, that's not me anymore. I give the full bar, so I get like 100.
Oh,
I get 150 to 200 people. In my block.
Wow, that's a fortune. The way things are now.
But it's so worth it. You see their faces.
Yeah,
and then, of course, you get the one kid with he doesn't want one big bar. He takes like five and then runs away.
Yeah. And they'll still TP your house. They don't care.
Nah, no one's TP'd my house because the bars are so good. You know what I mean? They just love it. Now, I have been to Doreen Taylor's house.
Okay? Oh, boy.
I mean, you know she's a celebrated singer, celebrity, done so many things, albums, doing all this stuff and everything.
And
I've gone to the house, right, where she, by the way, does her own gardening and her own landscaping. And it's like, I couldn't pay somebody to do it as well as she does. But we were talking before we went on the air, and it's about whether or not she's going to decorate for Halloween. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, the things that you could do. What I would do if I lived in your house, I would have Halloween everywhere. Why are you not going to do anything for Halloween?
All right, I'm going to say a very unpopular opinion right now, but I don't like Halloween. I don't like it.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I had a very traumatic experience when I was a little girl. I was about, I don't know, 6 or 8 years old. I dressed up as a cute little princess, of course.
Okay.
And I'm walking around trick-or-treating, and these older kids drive in some, oh, God, piece of crap car that was, like, you know, beat up. I grew up in a very farm country USA, you know. And they're in their back, and they were egging everybody, which, you know, taking eggs. And they hit me in my little head in my little princess costume.
Oh, my goodness.
So I go home and tell my dad, and he's I mean, it turned into like my own Halloween kind of movie. He's so mad that he takes like, I think it was a baseball bat and an axe, and he goes into the car and he starts driving around the neighborhood. I'm like, no, my dad's going to be in prison.
Hold on for a second.
It was terrible.
Hold on for a second. Chee, chee, chee. I'm sorry. I just couldn't help myself. It just
I know. It, so I have PTSD with the whole Halloween thing. I don't like it. I think of me as a little princess. And I know I'm covered in
egg. That's terrible. I went to school one day and they had a Halloween thing. It was like an elementary school, a Catholic school. And I got the wrong day. So I come in as a pirate on the day before they were having this Halloween thing. Oh, my goodness. Talk about embarrassment. But and I never wore that pirate outfit again.
Well, you know what? Just say it was a new fashion kind of thing. You know, you could have been a trendsetter.
This is true. How about you, TJ? You got a story for us?
No, I mean, I love Halloween. Halloween is my favorite holiday. I always look forward to it towards the end of summer, and I watch horror movies pretty much all year
round. I like
around.
Horror movies. I'm there with you on that one, though. I like my horror movies.
My wife hates it.
Oh, I love them.
Like, she just gets bored of it. I'm like, how do you get bored? It's so...
Depending. What's your favorite? What's your favorite horror movie?
My favorite is Halloween, probably.
Oh, okay.
The original one, though.
Yeah. Well, isn't the new one coming out?
Jamie Lee Curtis came out with Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
This will be the last one.
That's it. Friday.
This will be the last one for her.
I always confuse them. There's so many of them.
Yeah. I tell you, Michael is just amazing. I mean, he just keeps coming back and back and back and back.
He wears a mask.
Yeah, he does.
It could be anybody.
This is true.
They found him on the corner when they were like going to do the production.
This is true.
You want to be in a movie? Come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was in a movie where I got my head blown off. And by the way, if you pay $2.99, you can see a movie called Pickens on Amazon Prime.
Pickens.
In which I get myself my head blown off.
I'll tell you, people, it's worth the $2.99.
Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. Now, of course, we have Doreen here as my co-host. It's our second show. She is amazing. You have to go get her albums. You have to go on her website, which is amazing.
Tell
your website real quick. Website.
DoreenTaylorMusic.com.
Fantastic. She just did shows basically, or Battleship New Jersey, and just so many things that she does. She's an amazing host. And she's got one hell of a guest for us this week, folks.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yes, and this is the intro. Go right ahead, Doreen.
Well, it is a four-time Emmy-winning journalist and a person. Yes, not only just that, though. I mean, this is a legend in the Philadelphia area and beyond, in my opinion. And we've been friends for, oh, God, I don't want to say how long, but we have been friends quite a while. You've come to a lot of my shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, everyone in Radio Land, I would love to welcome you to my good friend, John Belaris.
Yay!
Well, congratulations on the show.
Well, thank you, John.
This is great. I love listening to the banter just as we're about to go on, so it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. It feels good to be back behind the mic a little bit.
You like
back
it?
Back from the dead.
Yeah.
Like Jason.
You were never dead. You were never dead.
No, I was dead a couple times.
No, we have to defibrillator in the other room for you, just in case.
All right.
Clear.
And by the way, I can train you all on that. I'm
CPR, Lord.
HAD.
You can take a joke and just turn that joke into something so straight, can't you?
I guess I'm
You're my straight man,
aren't you? I'm the straight man.
All right. So what does that make me?
My wife tells me that, too.
Well, that could be a good thing.
Well, if
as long as you're not the limp man, the straight man's better.
This is true. This is true. Well,
she's just trying to get a rise out of you. Okay?
Oh, begging. Good.
There we go. We might have to edit tape here, TJ.
No!
Just so you know.
We're keeping. So, John, thank you for welcoming.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
You know, when I was thinking of guests that I wanted to have come on, you were the first that popped into my head.
Oh, thank you.
And I said, I have to. You were my first choice, so you are my inaugural guest. And I just want to dig into your life because you are so freaking fascinating.
Yeah, I've been through a lot of different things.
Yes.
The journey has been quite interesting.
That is what it's about, the journey.
The journey has been, I don't know, the journey's not over yet.
No, you got plenty left.
You know, it all started way back in the 80s when I started with television at CBS News in New York. I was at the time, the youngest one ever hired by CBS News with only 5 days of television experience, filling in on a News 12 show. Yes. And the
5 days.
Yeah, CBS O&O was watching from the Hamptons and said, I think I see someone that has some ability.
What?
I was already ahead of the game. I already made a tape. You know what I did? My first time listen, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be the weatherman on television, right?
That was your dream. When you were a kid, you wanted to be a meteorologist, weatherman on TV.
I was going to ask that question.
Yeah,
voted most likely to be a TV weatherman in high school.
No.
Yes.
They had that category.
Well, they gave it for me because I was Johnny Weatherby, right? I always gave the weather right, even when I'm playing sports at the coach.
Kind of cute.
Are we gonna play? Is it going to rain today? Why don't I? Yeah, so very exciting. And I got my first job at CBS News. Only one ever hired with only no experience, basically, right? And the youngest one at the time ever hired by CBS at the time. This is 1987.
Wow.
And they wanted to make me look older. Right?
Yeah.
And I remember when I finally got out, like a long story short, when I finally went through all the interviews and all the, you know, going through the set and coming back and taking a look at the tape, what are you thinking? Oh, my God, that sucks. But they liked it. And they said, by the way, you know, when they put out the contract, I was just signing away.
And you didn't read it.
I didn't read it. They go, aren't you going to, don't you want to know what you're making? I said, it's more than I'm making now. Right?
Good answer.
So it was $37.5, right, for the weekends. But in that contract, it said we can fire you after every 12 weeks. I said, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'll ever do that. So,
and they didn't.
They didn't. They brought in another guy, you know, the CBS president.
Mm.
And they go, John, this is Eric Ober. I go, oh, you got a power tie on. I saw the blue. He goes, John, this is the president of CBS News. And he goes, I said, well, still a power, definitely a power tie. Said that. And then he goes, do you have a suit? I said, no, I don't own a suit.
Mm-hmm.
I was living with my fireman buddies. They were all New York City firemen, right, on Long Island.
Yeah.
And they went out and they got me a suit, four buttons, three suits to look older. And
So they were styling you.
They were styling me to make me look older.
They were creating your image from that was the moment.
They did. They did. And that's where it all started, you know, on that day in October 7th, in 1987. And it was the anniversary of my dad passing away on that day, but I buried my dad in a CBS TV T-shirt underneath his suit.
Aww.
So I always said, Dad was watching out for me because I got it. I got the job at CBS News.
Yeah, he was. You know, he was there. Yeah,
yesterday. So that's how the career started. It was
crazy.
It was the best time of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long were you there?
Oh God, I was at the weekends for 3 years. Then I came to Philadelphia in 1990. And I stayed in Philly until about 2004. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to New York.
Now, was that Fox 29 that you were on?
No, you were at
NBC, weren't you?
CBS.
Oh,
and
CBS.
Went to NBC.
Okay, you were on NBC,
CBS became NBC, Channel 10.
That's right.
Right? And then I stayed with them for 12 years. And then after 9/11, I was feeling like kind of a little sick about everything that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up, they asked me to come back to work in New York.
Mm-hmm.
For the 5, 6, and the 11 o'clock show, and the people here at NBC 10, Dennis Bianchi said, "You know, it's a wrong business decision, but it's a great personal decision for you. So I'm going to let you go and go to New York." And I went up into New York after that. So and worked the main shows for 4 years there.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is a meteorologist. The first thing that comes to mind is three words. Okay, not two, but three
words.
You
were wrong again? No.
Groundhog Day.
Oh, Groundhog Day.
Oh.
Okay.
I love that movie.
I love it, and I love it again, and
I love it again. Yes, that's right. Yeah, great movie, but every time I keep thinking, now I'm going to think of you as Groundhog Day, okay?
You're a little more charming than he was in the beginning. He ended up being you at the end.
Myself and Hurricane Schwartz introduced the movie when it came to Philadelphia.
Really?
So it was Groundhog Day. We got in front of the whole audience, and we were the, you know, knucklehead weather people.
I tell you, the weathermen, they've got some really good stories now. They don't just do weather anymore. They do a lot of human interest stories. They do a lot of different things.
You kind of started opening that door. You weren't just a meteorologist.
No,
you became more of a personality.
Yeah, I did that. I had an entertainment. They said, listen, we want you to do an entertainment show.
Yeah.
I said, I can't do entertainment. They said, you're going to do entertainment. I said, I don't really want to do entertainment show.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
Entertainment show for 5 years, radio. So I did radio in the morning. It was the Nut Hut in the morning. Then I would come in and do the noon show. Then I'd do the 5 and 6. And then I'd go home. And then eventually I wound up doing the 5, 6, and 11 o'clock show, radio, entertainment. But I made my weather remotes entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, informative and entertaining was a secret sauce.
Yeah.
When you're doing television, right? And being yourself, of course, because the glass doesn't lie. And I would just go out and think of different things to do. Wrestling an alligator, jumping from a bungee jump, while doing the weather and doing the current readings as I'm diving down.
Oh, my goodness.
Then my general manager got in my ear, If you jump, you're fired.
You didn't get the note? That's what we're going to do after the break. Uh-oh. Hey, did you give him the memo? We have it all set up for you.
Well, it's funny that we have to go to the break. We got to go to the break right now, but we'll be back with meteorologist John Valeris right after this. And so much more. Oh, yes.
The YMCA is just a starting line for the true self blooms only when we find our purpose, what makes us tick below the surface. Y is the before work hustle, an after school home, a section of my block, a corner to call my own. With my Y, I stand strong, seen and supported all along. It's a million faces in a mirror and everyone belongs. Find your Y. Join today at YMCA.org for a better us.
And welcome back to Take Two with Doreen and Pete on WWWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, a Beasley Media radio station. And we are with, and he's cracking everybody up here, just off the beat here.
His chair.
Yeah, faulty seats.
Do we have to work like this? Can't we get a better chair for our guests?
I know. He almost fell down.
Like a roller coaster ride. It's worse than a bungee jump.
I don't see him anymore. Yeah,
He just went down. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've written two books on roller coasters, by the way. You know, not bestsellers, but they're pretty good. And that was probably, you know, a really good ride.
John Valeris is always a good ride.
This is true.
Ask all the ladies.
Oh my goodness.
We're not going to open that Pandora's box.
So anyway.
No, we're not going to do that.
Anyway, folks, we are with, and now I got to be the straight man over here.
Yeah.
Television meteorologist and realtor John Valeris and his amazing story that he has with regards to all this. You know, I've done a lot of stuff. Not nearly as much as you. I was never an anchor. I was never a weatherman. I was always the guy they called in for a story. Mm. You know, whether it was aviation oriented, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, CNBC, whatever, Weather Channel, Travel Channel, whatever. But I was never the guy or the gal that actually said, okay, I'm the host. I'm going to interview you. I always got interviewed. And I tell you, what's it like to be on your end? We're flipping it now.
Because you and I, Pete, we're always on the other side, and you were the ones interviewing. It's just very interesting.
What's it like to do that?
I mean, I tell you what, it was a love. It was a passion. I had just had so much fun, right? And the thing is, in television, radio is better, right? Because you can really just be yourself and just say whatever, banter. Mm-hmm. You're not all these restrictions, fall off chairs. You know, you can have fun with it, right? You can make mistakes. It's all good. Yeah. Television, oh my God, did you hear what he said? You let the yelling in your ear. Did you just say Uranus? No, it's true. You know, because...
The eighth planet in the universe, just so you know.
It's not okay. Pluto is the one, though.
No, that's a dwarf now. That's a dwarf planet.
That's been downgraded.
Yeah, that's been downgraded.
There was a story on the news, and Carrie Lee Hulk, a very hot anchor, I go, hey, there was a story about the planets. I said, Carrie, tell us about Uranus. What if Valeris? Shut him up.
Mute.
And like... She died. She couldn't go anymore. But it was astronomy.
No.
So we had to listen.
No one can touch your Uranus.
Oh, God, I dropped down again.
He fell again. That's a warning. That's a warning. We're going into an area we don't want to go into.
I just had so much
fun. We do not want to talk about Uranus.
When the weather was serious, I was serious, right? Because that's what I lived for, right? The swarms. Right. But during the time when... people are watching the news. They need a break from all this stress. You know, it leads, it bleeds, all this glory. And during that time when I was doing TV news, there was much more focus on local TV news.
Yeah.
And I would give a break from the horrible stories that were surrounding everything going in. I made sure the lead to me was going to be a good lead. Mm-hmm. I didn't want, you know, some child.
Oh my God. I have done things where I had to perform after you hear about four kids were found in a closet hanging or something. Right. I mean, terrible. That's a true story.
Yeah. And then the anchors turn. Well, John,
and let's sing.
Put us in a good mood.
Let's sing now.
Oh, yeah. I'll put you in a good mood after you just this tragic story about
it. Exactly.
So I try to have that outlet for people. Because I needed it myself. Mm-hmm. I think it was a stress reliever for myself as well.
Yeah.
They would always scream at me to get into the studio, right? Because I'd wander in like with 10 seconds to go.
Oh, yeah. You're one of them.
Yeah. I just wanted to walk in and do it that way.
Yeah.
And the anchors would always say, hey, what should we ask you? Which we ask her. I don't know. Ask me whatever you want.
Right.
No, no, we don't want to look stupid. I go, you're not going to look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Ask like you would like a viewer.
Unless they asked about the eighth planet.
Right.
Then, well, then they would look stupid.
I would throw that little hook in there, right?
No, we don't want to go there again.
No.
I didn't say it.
That, yeah, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, I always like the spontaneity.
Yeah.
You know, of doing television that way. But again, the roots were from radio.
Well, you have that voice. Listen to the voice.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I mean, listen to it.
I was the first one to partnership Z100 and CBS News.
That's great.
That was big. So I would do the CBS News radio, Z100 from the CBS studios.
Yeah, in New York, right?
In New York, right?
I've actually done some stuff from the CBS studios. Mm-hmm. They don't use them anymore.
No.
I don't think they do. But, man, they were nice studios. They were really nice.
I would sleep in the soap opera room because I'd have to do the radio early in the morning at 4 in the morning. And, you know, I was living on the island then, Long Island. And I was doing this.
Long Island.
That's right. He says island. He thinks everyone knows around here. We know. Strong Island.
Yeah, Strong Island. And I would go to, you know, Sunday night news was over 11:35, so I'd just sleep in the soap opera room. And then, you know, I'd be wandering the hallways, getting ready to do radio and Z100. And then I finally came up with a great way to make the morning radio more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching Stallone get interviewed.
Okay.
And I'm in the green room. You know, see, it's a green room. I go, wow. I talk to his PR person. I go, hey, can I get Sly to come on with me to do radio? She goes, no.
Of course, PR.
I go, you sure? She goes, no. I said, it's Z100. She goes, okay.
Wow.
It was a powerful.
Well, that was back then. That was
huge. Bigger than any.
Scott Shannon was there at that time, right?
Yeah, Scott Shannon. Mr. Leonard, my lime green Pinto. Oh, my God, Scott, I'm late again this morning. I can't make it in today. It's the snow is mounting. Mr. Leonard, it's June 28th. It's no snow out there. Oh, that's right. And, you know, so I remember all those guys, Scott and Ross and Mr. Leonard.
Yeah.
And I was the weather guy.
Yeah.
So we set that up. So I brought Stallone on. He'd come on, and I'd say,
Adrian!
Just go on the mic.
That was about the worst alone. That was bad, man.
So he gets on. Pete, he gets on. He goes, hey, how you doing, Scott? You know what I mean?
He's pretty good.
We're doing pretty good today. Yeah, right?
Who knew?
So Scott goes, Polaris, that's the worst impression of Stallone I've ever heard. And he goes, excuse me, this is really Sylvester Stallone. You know what I mean? Hey, I go, hey, Scott, see, it's me back here. I go, oh, my God, he got Stallone on. And that's how that really started. So I did celebrity interviews.
That's so cool.
In the morning.
Which is cool, yeah.
But here's what he did. There was a hotline. Scott would be like, call me right after that. Hey.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was a different story.
Uh-oh.
I said, Crab Meadow, right? There was Long Island. There was a town called Crab Meadow. And I said, temperature, Crab Meadow, 57 degrees. But check, you know, you want to check yourself leaving that town. Right?
That's so something I would say.
So I get a call from Scott, that hotline. I go, hey, what's your title? I do the weather. Yes, you the weatherman. I'm the DJ.
Oh.
I tell the jokes.
Yeah.
You do the weather.
Yeah.
All right. That was.
You got schooled.
Yeah, I got schooled.
I can see that. Yeah. I bet Howard Stern had a few words for you.
Yeah, you've been on Stern a lot, haven't you?
Yeah.
You got engaged on Stern.
Yeah, I got engaged on Stern. I was his personal weatherman. I've had dinner with Howard at his home and stuff.
He's very different, right?
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's pretty introverted.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of those guys are.
When he's not out. He loves, you know, play chess and drink some red wine. He doesn't drink red wine anymore. But, yeah, he's a really, really humble guy when you meet him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know how he's a bit tall person in public. He doesn't like to go out. He feels like, you know, awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, try to get him to go out. Like, we both had homes in the Hamptons at the time, right? So I'd go to his house, and then I'd say, come on, Howard, you got to come over to my house. All the guys from the show would come over, but Howard would not leave. He would never leave. He felt safe in his home.
Yeah.
But he was really, really... interesting guy, and you go to his house, you got to take off your shoes.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, which I never
thought. That's everybody, I think.
Really? No, people make fun of me. They say, what is wrong with you? Like, you know, and I said, it's the most germs you can possibly have are on the bottom, the soles of your feet when you walk in.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
He hates bugs.
Especially if you have holes in your socks, which I have plenty
of those.
Well,
that's gross, too.
You
know what? Tell Doris to invest in some new socks for you.
She does. She does. But they're not as comfortable, you know?
You can, you know, get the dollar more socks for yourself.
Yeah.
I think TJ's got a question for you there.
I saw some like signals going on over here. What's going on, TJ?
So you work with Howard. How long did that last? And was he very, like, you know how, like, back in the day he was really, like, you know, at Gary's throat? Was he at your throat when you did radio with him? Or was it just, like, a spur of the moment type
thing? Spur of the moment. I mean, the only thing he said once, he goes, hey, wait a minute. I go, what? He goes, how'd you get Beth's number? I want to know how you got Beth's number.
That's his wife. Yeah, for his wife. That's Howard's
and
wife.
And I go, Howard, she gave it to me.
What? Oh. Beth.
And I said, you're not going to answer your phone for the weather. She would ask me, you know, because it was a hurricane. Yeah, you know, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, she was very, very sweet and loving with the animals. Like, you go to Howard's house, all the animals around, you know, walking in and all around the home. He's really, really, they're both into taking care of the dogs in a huge way. So,
that's great.
You know, so that was it, though. He kind of understood where it was coming from. The first time Howard ever met me, I was doing a show for NBC interviewing...
WNBC.
66 WNBC.
I feel like out of the loop here. What the heck is going on all of a sudden? It's like, you should be in the studio right now seeing what I just saw there.
Yeah. Well, we know. Yeah. You know.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm a different generation.
Yeah, so you
there's
are.
A
you're
gap
young.
Here.
Yeah, you're young.
I like him. See, it's radio. Yeah. You can you're lie. Young. See, you're I'm wrong. Young.
No. Everyone in the car would be listening to 66 WNBC
and
AM radio, but you would know everyone's listening to Howard because you'd be stuck in traffic.
Oh,
the Belt Parkway, and everyone was laughing in the car because of Howard.
Yeah.
He was, like, incredible. That's everyone. I mean, it was, you wanted to get into your car to listen to Howard.
Oh, yeah. What a following.
It was such a pleasure because you would laugh. You don't even, by the time you get home, you didn't even realize you're in traffic for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I had a Dodge Dart, you know.
Oh, my God. A little bit of the sting out.
Dodge Dart Swinger. That's what it was called.
Well, I never swing.
He didn't
in my
swing.
Dodge
he didn't
Dart.
Swing that way.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know. That's a little before my time, too, I think.
Yeah, well, we had a guest on, Frank Cipolla, who was a news guy for Soupy Sales between Howard Stern and Imus. And he used to have to hold them both back. They hated each other so much. It was incredible.
Wow. Howard didn't hold back when he didn't like someone. He did like someone. He wasn't fond of Imus at all, you know, so.
Polar opposites.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, now, but he was a real, you know, Howard's an interesting guy. I mean, high-pitch Eric still texts me almost every week.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John, you know, can you get me a, what are you doing this weekend? Can you get me a room at the Ritz? I go, high pitch, are you kidding me?
On this station a couple of years ago, I had Jackie the Joke Man on.
Oh, wow.
Funny guy, man, totally funny. But now I see that you're also the weatherman for Steinbrenner, the Yankees.
Yes.
Tell me that story.
I didn't know. You know what? You just taught me something I did not know.
Here's something really cool. So I was a huge Yankee fan then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I followed.
Can you say that here in Philly?
I can because I'm a big Phillies fan too. I love the Phillies.
How can you do both?
Listen, I got a Flyers tattoo on my butt. I got that. Okay. So listen, I'm back into the Phillies.
This is like turning into Stern.
So listen, I'm saying, oh my God, it's going to pour rain. You know, don't start. At the time, it was a Mucina. And I call the Yankees. I said, you got to get a message over to George.
Uh-huh.
And they go, what? I said, just tell him it's a diehard, you know, weatherman saying, don't even waste your time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't warm him up. The game's not going to be played. Sure enough.
Really?
They didn't warm him up. Game didn't play. I'm sitting in the studio. Call John. My producer picks up. He goes, it's George Steinbrenner. I go, ha. He goes, no, it's George Steinbrenner.
Yeah.
I go, hello, Mr. Steinbrenner. He goes, I want to thank you. Are you really the legend of a Yankee fan? Oh, yeah, Mr. Steinbrenner. I had drinks with Mickey Mantle back in 1987. I've been blah, blah, blah. He goes, I want you to come to my box. You're going to watch the game, the World Series. Thank you very much. thank you so much.
Yeah.
We saved his arm. Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
It was just like that.
I did not. That's a great story.
Yeah, you know, he sounds like Rich Little with these impressions.
I just said he's really good. You missed your calling.
Yeah, a man Another of a thing thousand you can, voices.
Well, he has so many different facets to his diamond over here. I think that might be another facet you need to add.
Facet? You call me fat?
Facet.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to break you guys up. We got to go to a break, but we will be back with, of course, John Belaris right after this.
No one should face breast cancer alone. I'm Janelle Hale, founder and CEO of the National Breast Cancer Foundation. When I was diagnosed in 1980, there was no internet and little information available to make an informed decision. Today at NBCF, we help women at every step of their breast cancer journey. Early detection saved my life. It could save yours too. Learn more at nbcf.org/hope.
And we are back to Take Two with Doreen Taylor and myself, Pete Trabuco, on WWDB, AM 860 Talk Radio, a Beasley Media Group radio station. And we have John Belaris here. John is a weatherman. Oh, and we're going to be talking also about real estate as well. Second career. Remember, this is Take Two, so we got two different careers going. But, you know, I don't know if you are what you were doing then. I know for Sandy, back in 2012, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. What was it like being a weatherman during that time period?
Well, here it is. I was not on the air anymore, right?
Oh.
Yeah, that was taken off the air with Fox News on Christmas Eve.
That's right. Without that's when we started. When we started becoming friends around that time.
They walked me out of the studio without allowing me to go back on the air 5 minutes before I was due to go on the air.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that was a bad day. With Sandy, you know, I get a call from Gary Pafafui. Hey, you know, Howard wants you to come on and do the weather, right? Can you do it for us, you know, with Hurricane Sandy? I said, sure.
Right.
So I went up to his studios, and then I went in with, at the time, my girlfriend Erica. And I went into his studio, and we're, you know, he said, all right, Belaris, give me the lowdown here. And I said, listen, Howard, you know, this is extremely serious. I think the canals could flood south of Canal Street and the subways can flood. He goes, he thought I was joking.
Right. Nobody thought that.
He goes, you're freaking kidding me. He said it a little differently. I go, no, it's true. He goes, you drinking on drugs? I go, no, it's true. So I went into it. Somebody goes, you think I'll make the Jimmy Kimmel show tomorrow? I said, later today? I said, nah, I doubt it. Mm-mm. So anyway, hey, Howard, you got to see who was in the green room. You know, bring her in. And that's when he brought in Erica. He's met a couple of my other girlfriends before. Mm-hmm. He goes, what's with it with you? Look at you.
Legitimate question.
What, this girl is beautiful. What are you doing? What?
I met Erica. She was very pretty.
So he goes, you know, he goes, are you going to do something serious for once?
Make her an honest woman.
And I go, well, Howard, it's good. She goes, Erica, what do you think? Well, do you love him? She goes, yeah, I do love him, Howard. I go, well, I love her too. She goes, oh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have a storm, right? You know, what's going on? This is kind of romantic. He goes, John, do you really love her? I go, yes, Howard, I do. I love. Then what are you doing?
The weather outside is
frightening. He goes, you should marry
Do we have to pay royalties now? Thank you very much.
And then he goes, oh, Howard. Then all of a sudden you hear Gary goes, oh, Howard, take a look at some of these pictures. She was in Playboy, right?
Uh-huh.
And he goes, oh, my God.
Okay. You in Playboy. You got to stay away from Playboy.
She was in Playboy.
Yes, but you were in Playboy, too. Yeah. Stay away from Playboy.
Got to hear this story.
Not his glory, but his words were in Playboy, yes. That's a different story for...
Which there were journalistic liberties taken in that.
Yes.
Anyway, so he said, you know, you guys should get married. And he goes, why don't you ask? And I did. But I didn't have any ring.
Yeah.
You know, so on the way to the Dr. Phil show, I wound up getting a ring on the plane. And then on the plane, I asked the pilot to go, listen, call us up at a certain time, and I'm going to get on the mic.
You did.
And
that's how you did it?
I get on the mic on the plane. So we're sitting like, and she goes, they called us. She goes, I knew we were going to first class. Uh-huh. I go, I go up, and then I took the mic, and I said, I want to get everyone's attention, and they handed out, like, champagne and everything for me. And I asked her to marry me.
They don't
do
that for you in coach.
No.
Trust me, I know.
and then I asked her to marry you on the plane.
So how big was the ring? That's the only question we women care about size.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's only about the ring. That's the only size we care
about.
It better
be bigger than one carat. It better
was three and a quarters.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Yeah. But it was white. You know, it was the good.
Oh my God, I got to teach you the words.
Clarity, color, cut. Right.
The C's. I think we're going to get a sponsorship now through an advertising.
I think we should.
Anything isn't hand-picked, it would be jewelers for me. Yeah. But anyhow.
So that's how that happened.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, then we went on Dr. Phil.
Well, you did cover Hugo, okay?
Oh.
With Dan Rather.
Yeah.
You got that right. That was my first eyewall penetration with the hurricane, right?
So, I'm not going there. No, not touching the eyewall penetration. I think that's, what are you doing to me today?
So honestly, my news director goes, Blairis, you were in the Air Force, right? I go, yeah. He goes, I want you to get on one of those Hurricane Hunter flights.
Oh, no. No, I'm a pilot, and I will avoid that stuff.
So I said, yeah, I could do that. And then Paul Sagan. Now, listen, this is my first year television. It's September. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, almost a little more, less than a year. And I said, sure, I can do it. Got a producer, got on a flight to Miami. And the producer goes, so what flight are we getting on? I said, I don't know. She goes, you don't know? I said, we'll talk a way to get on a flight. You see, these things just don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be on the list for months.
Right. Yeah.
I got to talk my way into this. She goes, oh, God. Right. So she goes, all right, so here's what we're going to do with the story. So she's looking at me.
Oh, no, keep going.
She's looking at me and says, have you ever done a news story before? I said, no.
Oh, wow.
I go, this is my first one.
Really?
She goes, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I said, nope. And I go, don't worry about it. It's going to sell itself. It's like a Mercedes, right? You're just going to, you know, it's going to sell itself. I know to do stand-ups and I know to do, you know, bridging and all that stuff. Don't worry about it, Gina McGill, right?
Yeah.
She goes, oh, God. So we get there. So we land and I go over to Dr. McFadden's office, who's the director of the flight to the Hurricane Center. And I go, listen, I need to get on a flight. He goes, you need to get on a flight. Yeah, Hugo, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you want to get on a flight for Hugo tomorrow? He goes, that's not a shot in hell.
Right.
You can't. We have this one going on, this congressman going on. You're not going to get on the flight. I said, you don't understand. This is CBS News. It's my first story. Mm-hmm. This is going to be huge. It's great for you. He goes, I don't give two rat's asses. He said it different than that. Get out of my office.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, I can't believe it. I said, do you know I was in the Air Force? He goes, so I walked out in the elevator going down, and I go to Jeannie, I don't think we're going to get on, but I got a different way of doing it. She goes, what are you going to do? Let's do a story on the Hurricane Hunters.
Ah.
So I did a story on the Hurricane Hunters, and I got cozy with the pilot and said, listen, can you get me on a flight? He goes, yeah, I'll get you on a flight.
Oh, my goodness.
See how it works?
Yep. So he goes to McFadden. McFadden calls me up. He goes, you're on the freaking flight, but your producer can't go, but your camera person can go.
Wow.
She goes, you can't go. Do you know what to do? I said, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out on the fly. Get it?
Yeah.
So we're in the eye of her. You know, we're going into Hurricane Hugo. My camera person is whipping
Forget
up and down.
It. It's awful.
Right? You hear the, that's all like hell hitting the fuselage. So it's banging up against the plane. So you bam, 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 bam. The Hugo said it's intensification process.
Yeah.
It's rapidly intensifying. We are getting jerked
around. Are you in the bands? I mean, are you
in the,
I mean, you're
wall.
Right
we're
through the wall.
Through, they go right through it.
Right through the wall.
Wow.
Right through the wall. My camera guy finally is like.
I was going to say. You start
throwing
you
up, right?
Yeah.
So we're in the eye, right? I see a satellite phone.
Oh, great.
I said, you know what? I give this a shot.
Uh-huh.
Call CBS News Desk. Dean Daniels, CBS News. I got through. But it's Blairis. Where are you? I'm in the eye of Hugo. No, where are you? I'm in the eye of freaking Hugo. He goes, don't go anywhere. I go, where am I going?
Yeah.
Let's hold the signal. And I was able to broadcast live from the eye of Hugo.
Yeah.
Just before it made the land strike in South Carolina, right?
Incredible.
And so I was able to get that.
Never been done.
Never been done.
No.
Right? So my news director was so, he goes, you were right in that interview. Said, why should I hire you? I said, because I'll never let you down. And he goes, you didn't let me down.
No.
Thank you so much. So the next morning, you know, I'm on air with Dan Rather. We call them, they're called gangbangs.
Mm-hmm.
The TV, everyone is like on it.
Yes, you do this. The
whole thing, right?
Yes,
everyone's
uh-huh.
doing all the interviews with all the anchors and the reporters, right?
Right.
I'm glad you explained that for this audience. Yes.
I wasn't, you know what? Did you like my restraint there?
Right.
I held back.
Yeah,
thank you very
it's
much.
It's very common in television news. Okay. So so I was able, you know, able to do that. So one of the best things that I did during that Hugo eyewall penetration was I was looking outside, the camera person was still there. I go, you're now eyeball to eyeball with Hurricane Hugo. I remember that was
That's
one of my
cool.
stand-ups, right?
Yeah.
And you go right in the eye. So then, you know, Rather interviewed me, Brian Williams at the time.
Didn't you win an award for that? Didn't you?
Yeah.
You came right out of the gate and you won an Emmy like right out of the bat.
Right out of the bat.
Wow.
And then I remember my news director said, "We're celebrating. We can't wait for you to get back. That is an incredible job. Off the charts. Make it back." I get back to the newsroom. It's like after midnight. Empty newsroom, just old bottles of champagne.
Yeah.
I go back in, you know, the following day. Mm-hmm. It's like it never happened.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like, you know, thank you. That was it.
They moved on to the next story. Well, that's the media for
you. Yeah,
that was that's it. A whole different
But you know what? It was great. But they, you know, I came through for them. I'm telling you.
What an experience, though. But take away just the media aspect and everything and being on the news and winning the awards. Just the fact that you did that and experienced that. I mean, how many people in this world can say that they were eye to eye with Hugo?
Yeah, and on top of that, you got an Emmy for it, so that they can't take that away.
No, that's true, too.
No, listen, that was in New York, right? And that was my first year of television.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always kind of just always reached for the sky. You know, the sky's the limit. I always I visualize. And as a kid, I visualized doing that. I visualize going into an eye of a storm. I visualize being on CBS News and doing the weather.
What's amazing about you, though?
I'd always visualize. Yeah. And I grew up with nothing. You know, people say, you know, you had a silver spoon. I said, no silver spoon here, man. I had
You worked. Nothing. You worked.
I, you know, my parents did not make money. You know, it was tough, you know. So, and I grew up in one of the worst neighborhoods in New York. And I was beat up there.
Where?
Part of it. Brentwood, Long Island. Brentwood was real bad in those days.
You were also a little kid running around talking about weather.
Kids with braces
I was going to say, why weren't you beat up? I mean, I probably would have beat you up.
Yeah. I was beat up.
Well, you also have a background, not just in New York, but Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You've also been, tell us some stories from some of the stations
you have so many.
Oh, my God. Let me see the story. I told you about the bungee jump when the GM yelled in my
ear. That was Philly.
He said,
New York would have let you do it.
Yep. He goes, you're fired if you jumped. I jumped. And then when I got back into the studios, he said, listen, I had to tell you that to cover my own butt.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course.
But, you know, good television. But I had to tell you that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you did it anyway. I knew you would do it.
Ratings, baby. Yeah. Ratings.
Yeah. Listen, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes in television and what goes on at the anchor desk and the tensions in the newsroom, the story that went on about when we won the first time we beat PVI in the head-to-head ratings, NBC, we became number one at 11 o'clock at night. So on a Wednesday, this is the last day the ratings book. This is a good story. It became big headlines. So on Wednesday, my news director comes up to me, do we got anything? Because, you know, weather sells. So I go, now, the only thing we have, Steve Schwade was his name, is maybe a potential of a storm on Sunday. I don't know what exactly is going to happen yet, but we have a potential for a snowstorm Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Potential, I said. He goes, okay, all right, I'm going to run a crawl. I said, okay, you go run a crawl. I don't do the crawls.
Sure.
During the show, Law and Order, crawl comes across.
No.
Potential storm of the century.
Oh,
this is the storm.
Goodness.
Oh, you're giving us the in-depth storm of the
century. That's where the storm of the century came from. Not me, Steve Schwade.
Oh, do you hear that, Steve?
That's it, Steve. We're after you now.
So listen. So that night, the numbers went bonkers.
Of course.
Right?
Ratings.
So I get a call from our PR person, Victoria Clayton, and said, listen, Stu Bykofsky, who was like the columnist.
Oh, yes, Stu. Yeah.
Yeah. Social, you know, like a Page Six in New York, he was the guy here. And he goes, hey, Victoria said, he wants to congratulate you. Congratulate me? I go, all right. Hey, congratulations, you sell out. I go, what are you talking about?
He
goes,
Still?
Yeah. He goes, I saw what you did. You called for a big storm. You got the numbers. You're number one. What kind of credibility is that? I go, what are you talking about, Stu? There is a potential, but I never said storm of the century. He goes, well, your colleague, Bill Henley, in the morning said nothing was going to go on that day. And I honestly said, you know, Bill doesn't read the computer models, right? This is going to be the case.
Yeah.
And he goes, so I'll bet you that we don't get more than 6 inches or more of snow. I said, I'm not going to bet that. I just said this. I'll bet your favorite charity that Monday's headlines will be weather related.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
You won that bet.
But listen, the storm of the century. So all of a sudden, that potential became reality. Thursday, everyone starts going talking about the storm.
Oh yeah, buying the bread, buying the
toilet paper.
Yeah, all
the meteorologists, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now it's the big buildup. Yeah. Now everyone's
look what you
on
did.
It.
Look what you did.
But you know what? I was ahead on the computer models. You
right.
Know, no one, so they finally were catching up, mm-hmm. and this bomb was really poised. Really, if this thing really, yeah. it was really. Incredible. Even, you know, Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel,
course,
right? He's
yes.
very credible. You know, I've worked
when
with
you
Jim
see him
before.
Coming, you know it's something.
So that Saturday, before the storm of the century,
mm-hmm.
he goes, folks, I just want to tell you, this is going to be like a hurricane with snow from D.C. to Boston, right? So when this, on the weekend, I call Steve Schwade because I get on the phone with Hurricane Schwartz and I go, listen, you're looking at the new computer models? I'd start pulling back on this. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a chance this thing is a little jog east. Some yeah. of the things that we're looking at were not as intense, or the precipital models were cutting back the amounts. I said, I'd start putting back on the throttle here. I called Steve Schwed. I said, I should come in, and I think we need to tame this a little bit. It's really... He goes, oh, no. Kathy Orr needs the promotion. She's covering this. I go,
yeah.
I understand that, Steve. We can work together, but I want to pull. He goes, no, the National Weather Service still has blizzard warnings. I go, Steve, I don't care what the National Weather Service is saying. I just need to know that we need to pull back on this. He goes, nope, not coming in. Did it, you know, still same thing. Next day, Sunday, I said, no, we got to definitely pull back on this.
Yeah.
Had a big argument with him. He said, okay, you come in Sunday early show with Kathy. Kathy will throw to you. You talk about what's going to go on and about the blizzard. I go, well, I'm going to talk differently than what she's going to say to me because you're telling her to do, I do my own thing. Mm-hmm. She's doing the national weather. I'm doing my own forecasting. And, you know, I've been discussing this with Glenn and la, la, la. Glenn couldn't come in because he got shingles. He got so, like,
oh,
nervous.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's what no one really remembers. On that Sunday of that blizzard for that Sunday night Monday, when Kathy threw to me in the weather center, I walked off the set.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And because I wasn't going to BS.
Right.
Right? So I get a call from Schwade saying, you know, I'm going to fire you for insubordination. Mm-hmm. I go, okay, go ahead and fire me. But, you know, this is not going to work. I'm going to just say you're telling me to lie.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, all right, you do the 11. Kathy's out. You do the 11. I said, thank you. 9:30, I'll never forget this. So I'm going to the makeup room. I got the some of the computer models, what printouts are called, like with the how much snow and all this, right? I'm looking at it, and High Pressure Harry is my, you know, my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And we both look, and we go,
yeah.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Steve, we need to run a crawl. He goes, for what? For nothing. He goes, are you kidding me?
Right.
I said, no. So we ran a crawl during... the show was that night. And I basically got on the 11 o'clock news and said, never mind.
Well, I hear that you got over 1,000 complaints, and on top of that, some death threats as well.
More than 1,000.
Why would people, you want to wonder what happens in people's lives.
This
that
is what
they want to do death threats.
Everyone said I was the one that created this. The storm of the century, right? I got on the Howard Stern show. They said, oh, my God, Belaris, what the hell? And I got threatened death threats.
Oh, my God.
You
got to have a bad life to want to kill a meteorologist because they gave you, you know.
And here's what I said. I gave the heads up.
Yeah.
Everyone later on was saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I never said storm of the century. And I try to get back on the air. And when I went into Steve Schwade's office and I said, I want to get on the air and say what really happened. He said, nope. We're in a fishbowl.
Yeah.
He threw his computer off the desk. I went nuts because you destroyed my credibility in that shot. And you know you were wrong. You know you lied. You ran that crawl. I really just gave what the forecast was looking like.
Right.
And I try to get on the air as early as Saturday, start to pull back on the throttle. No one wants to hear in the 11 o'clock news when the blizzard's due at 11 o'clock. It's not happening.
Right.
What?
Wow. And after that, you went to CBS, and you had a career there as well after that.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to be back with John Belaris right after this.
They came from every corner of the country, from small towns and big cities. But they all shared one thing in common. They belonged to a family called Marines. A tough and determined few dedicated to protecting everything we hold sacred. And still, they come. Celebrate the history of those proud few who have earned the title Marine.
And welcome back to Take Two with Doreen and Pete on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio Philadelphia. We have an amazing guest with us today, John Bolaris. And also, John, there is something that I got to mention. Man, you helped the FBI out, and you actually turned around, and now you're doing real estate. How did this all happen? How did it happen?
Well, after, when I got fired by Fox, the reason for that was what happened in Miami. I was a victim of a crime, but it didn't look that way on face value. You know, the news kind of did their own thing. When I was drugged and $43,673 was taken from me. Anyway, it was an organized crime ring in Miami. I worked with the feds to get them. I got my grand jury testimony, indicted all the criminals, 17 of them, in the organized crime ring, right? It was a Eastern European crime. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't think I'd have to testify in a federal court because they said they're going to plea bargain and we're not going to need you. And then they did, right? I had to testify in federal court in front of the entire mob.
Wow.
Right? There was four attorneys coming at me. And I remember Richard Gregory, the guy I was working with the feds, and he was the chief prosecutor. He took down Manuel Noriega. He was the guy, Pablo Escobar. He was the guy in charge of that.
Yeah.
And he says, let's go rehearse some. I go, no, we're not going to rehearse. I'm just going to say what the truth is. I remember what certain things that happened. And I did. My testimony put them all behind bars, right?
Wow.
And the thing is, because of that, it turned into this whole thing with the weatherman, real life hangover, what really happened. And they wanted to do a story on it, a movie on it. And myself and my agent said, no, they'll take journalistic liberties. Mm-hmm. We're going to get you back on the air, the whole nine yards. But honestly, I work with the feds. One of the guys went undercover and became one of the members of the mob.
Wow.
I was working with. Mm. And they said how they got the weatherman, right? What they did.
Oh, so
to
they.
The weatherman.
Yeah.
So, the whole
thing. They always talk.
So whatever, they gave me the signal. Listen, we're going to have a raid, at 5 o'clock in the morning on them. And we want to thank you.
Wow.
And it's been a long process, but we're going to get them.
How many did they? I mean,
they got over
they
300.
Had so
over
many.
300 were.
And you were the one that was able to.
I came back and
bring
I,
justice down.
You know why? Because I had nothing to hide.
No,
I was money was stolen from me. I
of
didn't
course.
Do anything, but I had a couple of drinks at the.
Did
Della.
You ever get it back?
No
money.
No, yeah, I was made whole again. I was made whole again.
They did.
Because I was sued by American Express. Well,
Their money.
The American Express, the one in charge of that. She got indicted too during my testimony because she was in working with them in a way,
mm-hmm.
not believing me, but believing them when they, so she was indicted and fired from American Express. In court, I won,
mm-hmm.
and that was the end of it. But already my career was already, because of everything that came out.
It's a double-edged sword.
So, they fired me, on Christmas Eve, and it was not true. And no one really, once things start snowballing, you can't bring it back in.
No. No.
But this show is Take Two, and you have a two here.
I got a two
I
here.
I was going to say.
So American Greed did a good story on it.
Yeah, I watched it.
They did an honest story on it. So if you ever really wanted the
it
real story, American Greed did an hour story on it, and they did their facts for 2 years, and I did the interview with them. And I don't know ever how that's going to turn out, but it turned out the way it should have been, and that was the story. So I moved on, and I had to reinvent myself in a big way because I lost everything, right? When I lost my contract with Fox, millions were taken away from me.
Right.
I had nothing. My income was not coming in anymore. That Fox gave me an ultimatum. Either if you're going to sue us, you're not going to get a penny. If you don't sue us, we'll give you $363,000, but you have a half hour to make that decision. If not, we'll bleed you dry.
Mm-hmm.
We'll bleed you dry.
Yeah.
I know I could have won that because I've had everything that was going on. I think it was twofold.
The legal fees, though, and
that
would have taken.
So my agent said, we're going to get you back on the air. Take that money, and we'll just get you back on the air, which that never happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was totally blackballed in Philadelphia after that. I mean, they wouldn't hire me for nothing. For working, and honestly, we did approach a station and said, listen, John will go on the air for nothing and just be ratings, whatever the numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
We could coordinate with that. We'll make the money that way.
Yeah.
Nope. No, not one person. They all had this little thing. You don't hire Bolaris. You don't hire. And I know this
very
is
very small little circle.
You don't hire
circle.
Bolaris. You don't hire. And then they didn't. So I had to reinvent myself. After 3 years later, Good Morning America calls my agent. I think I have a job with Good Morning America. And then I thought I was getting GMA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living in Montauk. I got away from it all. I wanted to just move away.
So I remember.
Living in Montauk. And so I'm driving on the LIE, going to meet the group at New York for Good GMA. My agent calls and says, never mind, Ben Sherman, president, you have too much baggage. And, you got to, what's it called? Human resources put the flag on you. Turn around. And I turned back, and that was probably the lowest day of my life professionally. A lot of thoughts went in my mind.
Sometimes you have to go there before you find maybe your true calling or a different passion. A
lot of thoughts went into my mind. Almost walking to the beach, looking in Montauk, I was going to kill myself. I was going to walk into the water. And then I saw a cross with a girl on it. You know, this isn't Montauk Point.
Right. That's not.
And I look, and I thought about my daughter.
Right.
And I said, no, that's a signal. You know, I'm not.
Your sign.
I'm not doing that. I can't do it. Right. My daughter's living with me now, which is great.
I know. Congratulations on that. You're a full-time dad now. Yeah.
So anyway, my good Bert Brodsky, my father figure and my business mentor, calls me to his place, his beautiful estate in Sagaponack in the Hamptons, and said, listen, can you do me a favor? Can you get into real estate for me? I said, real estate? He goes, yeah, you're perfect for it.
So just that conversation.
Yeah, and he
right
goes,
there.
If you get into real estate, he gave me the reasons why, and then said, I'll give you my Gatsby property as your listing.
That was your big thing, wasn't
and
it?
I
your
go,
first?
Yeah, I go, 3 days later, I enrolled in Temple in real estate. I said, okay, now I have to develop this luxury brand. I came up with Black Label.
Right.
Because of a black card. I was already built in marketing. I didn't know whether I was going to have to trademark and patent because, you know, you don't know if Amex or someone's going to say, nope.
Sure.
But we got it, you know?
Yeah.
16 months later, got the brand, and I was able to kind of get it going and then developed and kept creating this great team of great, great agents, super agents. Mm-hmm. We look at agents first, not for how much production really, although that helps, is to be nice. You have to be a nice person.
Sure. Right.
Can't train that, right?
No.
So I love everyone to be nice. Like when we do our Zoom calls, I'm like the comedian a little bit. I give
you? Come on now.
I relax them a little bit, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it's intense, right? We're in an intense luxury, right? Million and above. It's intense with the clients.
You do celebrities. You got didn't you get Adam Sandler?
I got Adam Sandler
place?
His place.
When he was doing Hustle, right?
Hustle, got him placed twice. I got Jay-Z, Beyonce,
that's right.
Their place. You know,
wow.
Work with a lot of the athletes, can't say who.
Oh, of course.
Great places. We do a lot of off-market. Right now we have about $47 million in inventory that we still
got. But, you know, I wish we had started this earlier, but unfortunately we're running out
of
time.
I know, we have to have you back.
But we want to get the website, your website, okay?
Yes.
Easy, blacklabelkw.com.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It's amazing
it
what
is.
You've gone through and where you are now.
To reinvent. How to reinvent.
You are an inspiration because you, whatever it is that you have a desire or passion for, you never give up.
You know, you're the same way. You're the same way. We just always have that innate passion.
That's the drive.
The drive.
That's what sets people apart.
That doesn't stop. And that's kind of hard, too, because at times you just can't sleep at night. You're always thinking. But it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
That's a great way to leave off on this show. Thank you again for being with us. And we'll be back again next week.